At 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. A Confederate statue will stay put in downtown Denton, but with added historical context. Denton County Commissioners this morning approved a recommendation issued by an advisory committee. It recommends the 100-year-old statue of a Confederate soldier be accompanied by a plaque denouncing slavery, as well as video kiosks to add context. The statue will remain on the south side of the county courthouse lawn. The average military family moves every 2 to 3 years. Their household goods are supposed to follow them, but it doesn't always pan out that way. Some military families report that their possessions were lost, damaged, or stolen during moves, and they say the military doesn't do much to help. More now from Carson Frame with Texas Public Radio.
Sarah Toronto's forehead knots with frustration as she looks through old photos on her laptop. She's an amateur photographer who loves to capture images of her life with family and all the places they've been stationed with the Army.
This was where my husband had all of his Army achievement medals, all the coins, they call them.
But she never expected to need the photos as documentation. The Torontos moved from Germany to San Antonio in May. The Army paid for their move and selected the moving company. But when their shipment of furniture and household items arrived in Texas, somebody had ransacked it.
They went through everything. I mean, just empty box after empty box. That was a dollhouse that my uncle built me when I was a kid. You can see on the other side, they had actually sliced it open looking for stuff on the inside of it.
The shipment had been robbed in transit for a loss Toronto estimates at $36,000. Other service members coming from Germany had similar problems. Toronto went up the chain from the local Army Claims Office to the Secretary of Defense, trying to figure out who was accountable.
It probably took me almost 2 weeks of calling almost every day to different places, asking the question, okay, I'm having a trouble with our moving company. I want somebody aware of what's going on, and I want to see if I can get them punished. Who do I go to?
Where do I file?
Yeah. And that was what everybody was like, I don't know.
Every year, the Defense Department moves about 430,000 people and spends more than $2 billion doing it. But nobody keeps track of how many have problems. Kelly Ruska is with the National Military Family Association. She says overseas moves are especially troublesome because they're more complicated. Most problems are relatively minor, but thefts do occur.
We've heard cases where somebody will open a box and it'll be labeled books and it'll be filled with bricks. So sort of like a bait and switch type thing.
Even for more typical problems like damaged furniture or accidental loss, Ruska says families often don't get back what they think the items are worth. And she says sometimes military contracted movers just wait out families who file claims.
You know, the companies have just really drug their feet, haven't been as responsive, and I think they just hope that, you know, the family's going to forget about it and move on.
Transcom, the U.S. Transportation Command, is the government entity responsible for moving military families, but it doesn't systematically track complaints. Most are handled by local claims offices. Still, Transcom leaders say they communicate with those offices enough to hold movers accountable. They say the Toronto's mover was eventually suspended for failing to prevent the theft. And Colonel Ralph Lonesborough, chief of Transcom's personal property division, says cases like the Toronto's are not typical.
Right now, we're at around 91% customer satisfaction. But of course, one of the things we realize when you're talking 430,000 people, that 9% represents about 35 to 40,000 people that are not satisfied with their moves.
To address that, Transcom is reworking move.mil, the website where families set up their moves. Lonesborough says that will make it easier for families to get help with problems and help Transcom find out about those problems. But that will come too late for Sarah Toronto. She holds up a broken canvas with a child's drawing smeared across the front. Once a birthday gift from her daughter.
She wrote me a little note on the back. It was like one of the sweetest things she'd ever given me so far. Even now, I just want to go wring somebody's neck because I'm never going to be able to fix this.
In her case, some losses can't be recouped. Reporting from San Antonio, I'm Carson Frame.
This story was produced by the American Homefront Project. It's a public media collaboration that reports on American military life and veterans. On Tuesdays, One Crisis Away looks at life on the financial edge. Today, the 2018 forecast for low-income families, according to an Austin-based policy group. The left-leaning Center for Public Policy Priorities works on everything from healthcare to hunger. Courtney Collins talks to Executive Director Ann Beeson about the most pressing issues she thinks Texans are up against.
Ann Beeson, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
The beginning of the year is always a good time to take stock and kind of assess where we are as individuals. How would you assess the state of Texas when it comes to opportunities for moderate to low income working families?
There's a lot of talk of the so-called Texas miracle, but the question is, miracle for whom? And what we see is some great figures around Texas being a great draw for business, but how are our lower income families doing? And unfortunately, they are not faring well at all. We still have very entrenched poverty all over Texas, and worse numbers here in Dallas. We have over a third of Dallas children living in poverty, and a very high rate, again, around the state as well.
I'd like to talk a little bit about hunger. Mm-hmm. What are some of the common misconceptions about who's going hungry in Texas?
Most Texans would be shocked to learn how many Texas children are at risk of food insecurity. Over 27% of children in Dallas County alone are food insecure, meaning they lack consistent access to enough food for a healthy diet. And we see that actually among working families, among both Black and Hispanic children, as well as white children in families. It is a major issue. And I think we have to ask ourselves, as a wealthy state, how have we not built the will to solve childhood hunger in Texas? All of the government food and nutrition programs are funded through federal funds, SNAP, what used to be called the food stamp program. And there have been and will continue to be, we expect, significantly more threats to cut those programs. Again, we might ask, why is it that so many families are at risk of going hungry? Why are they food insecure, especially if they're working families? What's that about? It gets a core driver of poverty generally, which is that we have too many low-wage jobs here in Texas, one of the highest rates of low-wage jobs in the country.
I'm guessing Hurricane Harvey made the back half of 2017 busier for you all than expected. Are victims of that storm still feeling its impact months later?
Absolutely, and they will for many months and years to come. Unfortunately, before Hurricane Harvey hit, we had immigrant families in Texas living in a climate of fear because of both state and federal immigration policies that put them in much more danger when Hurricane Harvey hit. There's an irony here because the industries that will help to rebuild Houston and all the other areas that are affected by the storm rely on immigrant labor, and yet those immigrant families are often the ones that were most likely to have lost housing, lost jobs, and at the same time, they're afraid to come forward and seek help because, again, of these draconian immigration policies.
Speaking of immigration, the Center for Public Policy Priorities supports a National Dream Act, or a pathway to citizenship for immigrants who were brought to this country as children. Mm-hmm. You all released some research about how that would affect tax revenue compared to what would happen if DACA recipients lost authorization to work. What did you find?
What we know is that we have approximately 177,000 young Texas immigrants who are eligible for DACA, and they currently contribute over $240 million to local and state taxes annually. If we don't get a National Dream Act passed, that would mean Texas could expect to lose at least $79 million in state and local tax revenue. That is the projected loss if DACA recipients stay in the state after losing work authorization, which would mean that they would, you know, only be able to earn lower wages and they would be much less likely to file income tax returns.
What's the one takeaway you'd like to have kind of middle class and upper middle class families understand about folks who live on the financial edge?
These are people who are working very hard. They're working full-time, even working full-time and sometimes, you know, more than one job. It is just not possible in our economy today for them to make ends meet.
Ann Beeson, Executive Director of the Center for Public Policy Priorities. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
A winter weather advisory is in effect until midnight for areas north of Dallas-Fort Worth. That includes Denton and Collin counties. It's possible that light freezing rain will fall in some areas between now and midnight. The National Weather Service warns that the freezing rain could result in a light icing on overpasses, sidewalks, and some roads. It's also possible that any ice that accumulates tonight will remain on surfaces through tomorrow morning. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.